Penguin Random House Audio presents Last Stop in Brooklyn, A Mary Handley Mystery by Lawrence H. Levy. Read for you by Cassandra Campbell. To David Campagna, my great friend for over 40 years and a man of many talents. Prologue. On December 4th, 1891, Russell Sage had a hunch. That was nothing new. Hunches were a big part of his business life. What usually followed was exhaustive research, then weeks of stock manipulations until he had seized control of a targeted company. There were few regulations on the stock market, but even so, his methods were considered to be at the very least unethical and most probably illegal. And the result was almost always the same. He would invariably make a lot of money while others took financial baths. But this hunch was different. It bore no fruit for him. No money, no prized company. The result of this hunch was that he was hiding in his office. The Wall Street magnate and railroad titan rarely shied away from anyone. Even at the ripe old age of 75, he was a tireless worker and a fearless risk-taker who had no qualms about making suspect stock transactions and buying politicians to ensure his success. The almighty dollar was his religion, and God have mercy on anyone who tried to separate him from it. His devotion had paid off, and he was currently one of the richest men in the United States. Sage and his partner, Jay Gould, had been cohorts of Boss Tweed, the infamous head of New York's Tammany Hall, and Sage had no qualms about showing his support when Tweed was arrested. When cartoonist Bernhard Gillam depicted him along with Gould and Cornelius Vanderbilt in a scathing rendering where they comfortably rested on millions of dollars as many poor workers carried them, he wasn't concerned. Sage didn't care what people thought. He considered himself untouchable. Yet on that day, something had changed. This man with his closely cropped hair, conservative suit, and signature bow tie was experiencing a new emotion. He was scared. "This is insane," Sage thought, watching his hand shake as if it weren't part of his body. He didn't recognize the name of the man who was in his outer office demanding to see him, and if Sage didn't know who he was not worth knowing. "I'm sorry, Mr.," said Peter Ramsey, Sage's secretary, who had already forgotten this innocuous man's name and had hoped he would repeat it. "Norcross, Henry L. Norcross," he responded, exasperated at Ramsey's lack of attentiveness. "Please write it down so I don't have to keep repeating myself." "Not necessary. It is now indelibly implanted on my brain. But no matter how disappointing the news might be, it's not going to change. Mr. Sage is presently out of town." "Stop lying to me," Norcross shouted as he rearranged the strap of a bulky satchel he was carrying on his shoulder. "Mr. Norcross, could you please lower your voice?"
"Mr. Sage has a board of directors meeting for Western Union this afternoon, and a stockholders meeting for his railroad properties tomorrow. Don't try to tell me that he'd miss those. He never misses them."
"You seem to know so much about his activities. You tell me where Mr. Sage is."
Ramsey raised his voice almost to Norcross's level. It was a signal to Sage. Essentially, Ramsey was telling Sage that if he had any desire at all to see this man, now was the time to show himself, or he would dismiss him post-haste. Sage didn't know what to do. Like the man had said, he did have a board of directors meeting later that day. Even if he slipped out the back door, where was he to go? Trekking all the way home and returning in a few hours seemed like a waste of time. He was a man who firmly believed in rational thought, and he could not find any justification for his completely irrational desire to flee. Suddenly,
He got angry. If this fellow thought he could come into his office and intimidate him, he was dead wrong. I don't get intimidated. I'm the one who does the intimidating.
Sage straightened up and marched into his outer office.
What's all the commotion about out here?
He asked, sporting his best stern Russell Sage visage. Upon seeing him, Ramsay felt the need to cover and acted surprised.
Oh, Mr. Sage, you've returned. I didn't see you come in, sir.
How unexpected. And from out of town, too,
Norcross said facetiously.
I wonder if he still has his luggage in his office.
Sage would have none of this and responded sternly.
Look here, Mr. Norcross,
Ramsay offered, trying to be helpful.
I'm a busy man, and you're disrupting my office. Quickly state your business and then leave.
I appreciate your directness, Mr. Sage,
said Norcross. Then he reached into the inside pocket of his suit jacket and handed Sage a piece of paper.
This is my letter of introduction from John D. Rockefeller.
Oh,
said Sage, softening a bit.
From John.
He quickly glanced at the letter, then exclaimed,
What kind of charlatan are you? This isn't from John. True, but it got you to take the letter, and I strongly advise you to read it. It's in your best interests.
As Sage read the letter, his face became tense and somewhat contorted.
$1,200,000. This is preposterous.
The other employees in the room looked up. It was a tremendous amount of money. But they had heard Sage negotiate sums of that nature before, or had at least seen it in the paperwork.
I know you have significantly more than that, said a calm Norcross, completely undaunted by Sage's outrage. It's a mere drop in the bucket to you. In cash? You're crazy if you think I have that kind of money lying around my office.
After looking into Norcross's eyes, Sage immediately regretted his outburst. He concluded that this man not worth knowing, this nobody, just might be crazy. He tried to rid his voice of any hint of anger, attempting to sound reasonable until he could come up with some solution, one that would not involve costing him $1,200,000.
You understand, of course, that it is a large amount of money. And even for a man of my means, it will take a while to accumulate. Well, I don't really have a while, so in that case...
Norcross slid the satchel he was carrying into his left hand, as if he was about to throw it to the floor. Sage instantly reacted, waving his hands wildly.
No, put the dynamite back. We'll figure something out. I promise.
The mention of dynamite caused all eyes in the room to click toward Norcross. Up until this point, they'd had no idea their lives were in danger. The question was, should they run for the door, or would that just cause him to set off his bomb? At the moment, no one was moving. The door to the office opened, and in stepped a 35-year-old man dressed in business attire. Sage had never seen him before. But he welcomed any diversion that might distract Norcross until they could find a solution.
Hello, sir. May I help you?
I come from John Bloodworth and Company, Mr. Sage. I have some papers for you to sign.
Ah, perfect,
Sage said, then turned toward Norcross.
My banker. I couldn't ask for better timing.
He motioned for the man to approach. Jay Gould was annoyed. He was sitting in the coffee shop across from the arcade building at 71 Broadway, where Sage's office was located. Gould and Sage had regular strategy meetings the day the Western Union Board of Directors met. Gould had misread his pocket watch and had arrived 20 minutes early. There wasn't enough time to return to his office and get anything accomplished. He could have gone straight to Sage's office. Sure, Sage would drop anything he was doing for him.
instead.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?